got it.
Quick note on that COVID death thing. You see that, Tom? So it's 26 most reported, but then the second sentence that Miley reported was that they had batched them together because they hadn't reporting. So it was So it's not like it's on the rise. It's that you don't count them for 3 days or four days, and then you get 26. Just to,
that's often happens on on Mondays because there's a backup over the weekend too.
Don't panic, everybody. Dive in there. On average, down to about 4 to 5 people a day dying from it. So as the number of people get it, still the number of people dying continues to decrease. So seems like it's less.
I don't think it's decreasing the number of people. It's lower.
Yeah.
Less. I'm not sure that it's decreasing.
More people are getting it. Fewer people are dying.
I mean a percentage, you mean, in terms of
percentage. No, overall. Just fewer people are dying of it. So it seems it could be a less virulent strain, possibly, or the low-hanging fruit got hit first, and now it's people that have it are younger. They were the ones marching around Black Lives Matter. They have it. Their immune system is stronger. They're able to deal with it, and they get over it. So there's the idea that it's sweeping across, and look out, everybody. It's killing everyone. Not the case. He is he's the guy that can play every position on the field, because if any sort of story comes out and Sully's like, I can talk about that. As demonstrated the other day when he talked about how to get tree sap off of your car. Thank you for that little tidbit, Sully. So here we are.
Sure, and to be honest, I made that up.
I was going
to say. Welcome to our show.
I was going
to
say.
Yeah, exactly.
It took some of the paint off the bumper, and I'm not happy about that. All right.
Take it out of what you owe me.
By the way, they still haven't closed that lane down amazingly. All right, Boeing. I think of you. Let me tell you something. You haunt me. I'm on that road every day, and I go by. I get in that lane. And I'm like, darn that Sully. I wish he would transfer to Russia. All right, Boeing will cut production and jobs further, and may build a 787 in South Carolina. This story comes out, and the stock takes a tumble again. More hard bad news for Boeing.
Yeah, this is the third straight losing quarter they've had after just record growth over the last couple of years. And I think one of the bigger takeaways from this, because everyone expected them to take a bath today and when they released their second quarter earnings, is the fact that they've actually now confirmed that they being the Boeing brass, looking at potentially consolidating the two 787 lines, the one here in Everett and the second one in North Charleston, South Carolina, into one production line. And so they're studying that and looking at the feasibility as they announced the production cutback to just 6 787s a month. And so the question becomes, okay, who wins in that case? And most everybody agrees that if it comes down to those two lines, the Everett line is closing because it can't compete with the fact that the biggest number of the family, the Dash 10, is built in South Carolina. And the Dreamlifter that takes parts to Everett can't fit that fuselage in it. And so you would think the one that can handle the biggest load would win. However, in speaking with the reporters, the CEO, David Calhoun, said, look, he hasn't made that decision yet. It's based on production right now. And if they foresee that maybe they need to go back up to 10 a month, they don't even know if it's feasible to build 10 a month with just one line. So it's not time to panic yet. But if I was an 8-7 worker in the Everett area, I'd be a little nervous right now.
A couple of questions just on that score. Does the union angle have anything to do with their decision?
I think at this point, Tom, it really comes down to who can build all of the airplanes on their line. And the fact that North Charleston has the biggest one and Everett can't really facilitate that, that's a problem or a mark against the Everett plan.
Okay.
Isn't this a big concern that people had when Governor Inslee, who campaigned to be president of the United States, when he cut the deal, I think the largest deal ever with any corporation regarding tax breaks, wasn't this the big concern that they didn't put in there that you've got to keep a certain number of jobs, a certain level of production here, and can't transfer it out to South Carolina, a right-to-work state?
Yeah, now what happens, you got to remember, there were two mega deals along the line. There was one to keep the 8-7 here, and then the one to keep the 777X and all the composite technology in it. So the tax breaks that Boeing received under that deal for the 8-7 plan have expired. So at this point, it can't run afoul of something that is no longer valid. Oh. But your point is well taken that, you know, that was kind of the promise. But those tax breaks are over. They've moved on from that. So that cannot be really used as a political tool to keep the line in Everett versus North Charleston. Now, if they were to try to do something with the 777X line, certainly, because those tax breaks are still active.
Mm-hmm. So I heard you this morning, and you seem more optimistic about the Everett line, staying extant, I guess, rather than going away. And I'm wondering if what kind of scenario does the future have to hold for Boeing that's rosy enough for us to be able to have both a line in Carolina and here?
Well, basically, the people have got to get their butts back in airplane seats. People have got to be comfortable flying again and flying that style, the twin aisle airplane, which is primarily the international routes. I mean, we're expecting Boeing aviation analysts are expecting that the single aisle, like the MAX variants, those guys will, you know, the carriers that go within country, from China to China, America to America, whatever, you know, those will come back first and the international travel will lag. And it's those international flights, the wide bodies, the 87, the 777X, those planes service that. And if that doesn't come back, that's the issue. And if they're still at 18 months away, still at six planes a month, well, that's a strike against the needing two lines. If they see it come back and it's robust, or their crystal ball says, okay, we can get back to 10, well, then it's going to be those international flights that rely on the twin aisles airplanes, the bigger planes to do it. And so that's what you got to look at. Not necessarily people flying domestically. It's the international travel that really will drive what's going to happen here.
And how quickly is there kind of like a calendar date when they will have to make this decision to pull the plug or not?
No, not at all. Right now, they're just discussing the feasibility. I mean, they're looking at it because we know the company is bleeding cash and they're trying. I mean, David Calhoun, during the conference call this morning, I can't count how many times he said liquidity, liquidity, liquidity. They're trying to, they're trying to stay as cash rich as they can. And unfortunately, that means cutting jobs and that means, looking at, closing down production lines. So, no, but there's no hard and fast, like by the end of this year, we're going to make a decision. It's going to be based on what their analysts say about the traveling public and how long we're going to stay in the current global slowdown that we're in.
The good news is, last week, I think Wall Street Journal had it, that Airbus has finally decided it's going to stop violating rules with the World Trade Organization and stop getting fined and zapped by those guys and try to compete with Boeing straight up.
Yeah, and they've been fighting. These two kids in the playground have been fighting over this match for 30 years, over this, that, and the other thing. And so, honestly, because you could have made the case that with the deal that the governor made that for the 87 line and the 777X line, that was considered a subsidy. So was Boeing afoul of the same kind of rules? But yeah, it was good that we saw those announcements from Airbus that, maybe they're willing to kind of play things nice, especially since the Trump administration is promising more tariffs on their goods if they don't. There's a lot going on here, but these two really need to put this thing to bed for the overall benefit of the flying public and the aerospace industry left. Because, they're the two big boys on the block, and if they're not making airplanes, that means suppliers aren't shipping parts and the airlines aren't flying people. It's better if they play nice.
And then
there's plenty
of
money to be had.
And then you know what happens? You have nothing to talk about.
Oh, I'll have plenty to talk about. Give me a topic.
Parochial schools.
How do I know when my dog is not feeling well?
I don't know.
What?
It's the first sign of wisdom when you admit you don't know something.
No, hold on. You don't know that one?
No. I had a dog as a kid. I've become kind of a cat person now, unfortunately.
Hey, Sully. You have Sully as a dog person? Cat person?
Yes. Definitely. He is a dog.
Sitting there with a cat? How annoying. A cat would find him to be so annoying. It doesn't want to sit on its lap, you know. Come here. Let me pet you. $600 a week, the extra unemployment ad, does it defer people from seeking employment? This is a study that comes from Yale. Don't forget Yale, named after a man that not only owned slaves, but was a slave trader. So keep that in mind. That this study says there's 68% of the workforce is receiving, this is crazy, more money than they were making previously before COVID-19 and the government shut everything down. So they are getting more with the $600 and the unemployment. They're sitting at home, getting more money to be at home. Then the next thing is, would you go back to work if it meant making less money? And according to the study from Yale, again, named after a slave trader, the study says that's not what's stopping people from going back to work.
Yeah, there are two surprising results. Yeah, yesterday we were talking about, I wish we knew what percentage of people are we talking about that make more money with benefits than they did when they were working. And son of a gun, if it isn't 68%, that's a lot. Now, it does make sense because what the $600 represents was $15 an hour, which is sort of like not the national average, obviously, for minimum wage, but it's the high-end average of the states that have adjusted to that. So that might not be as big a surprise, but 68% is a huge proportion. But the other surprise is that that's having no effect on whether people are going back to work or not. Mm-hmm. So both the Republicans and the Democrats, I think, have a point to make here. I think the Republicans' point is this is ridiculous. Almost, you know, I guess so about two-thirds of the people that we're giving money to are making more than they did when they were working. That's in the Republicans' favor. And the Democrats' favor is, no, because look at so many people of our, that doesn't stop them from going back to work. And right now we still have 32 million people, you know, unemployed. How many of them would go back to work? Well, already we've seen people that can go back to work do go back to work. So it, in terms of the arguments, the rhetorical arguments on both sides, both parties make some score, you know, off this Yale study, apparently named after a slave trader, I hear.
Yes, that's right, Tom. So we have to take all that with a grain of salt.
Oh, yes.
What? They're all racist. They should change the name of the school. So the Republicans are saying, let's knock it down to $200 a week. And the Democrats are saying, no, let's continue to write checks so the people vote for us. We'll go all the way up to January, continuing with $600 a week.
Well, the problem is, John, because not everybody, just because you're making more than you were, not everybody is turning down jobs. Apparently, nobody is turning down jobs. I mean, anecdotally, obviously, there'd be some. But people are returning to their jobs when they have a chance to turn back, you know, get back to jobs that are available. There are just not that many jobs available at this point.
That's the case. Although I think the average person, if they're above, you know, slightly above average intelligence, you have two choices. You could take what's behind door number one, which is a Barker lounger and a television set and $300 more than you'd make if you went into work where a guy with a short sleeve shirt and a tie on that clips on yells at you for 4 hours. What do you want to do? The guy's like, I think I'll take door number one where I get to sit down and make $300 more and not have to go to work. Right. That's an intelligent move. Oh, please. That's an intelligent Tom, anybody would choose that.
No.
I'd rather go back to work and make less money.
John, I think a lot of people take pride in their work. A lot of people like their jobs, and they feel like they don't want to be seen as some kind of freeloader and all this. I think a lot of people do that. And this study seems to indicate that. Which is a surprise, I'm sure, more to you than to me, but even so, it's a surprise if that's really the case.
Yeah, I think people can take pride in their work, but I think they're smart enough to realize, wait a minute, let me get this right. If I go back into work where I actually have to do this thing called work, I'll make less money?
But in the long term, if you think of it as a long term effort, when the economy does come back, when these things do run out, when there is a job to be had, you want to be in on the inside. You know, rather than not, if you had a career like in Cairo, I mean, I'm sure it'd be easier for you to sit back and get paid without doing this show. But at some point, because these are only temporary helps, at some point your pride would kick in and say, no, I like being the second fiddle on the Tom and Curly show.
You don't want to use me as sort of metric or benchmark for people
that's for sure.
Right. Jacob, when I told him I was in the dentist chair for 11 hours today, numbers keep going up. He said, yeah, why don't you just take the day off the way I did? I said, you know why? Because I have a problem, and I need to work.
See, that's good.
I'm not
We're banking on you, John.
What's that, Tom?
We're banking on you.
Yeah,
there are a lot of us that want to work. We feel like we take pride in our work. We want to work. It's not an obsession like with you. You have to work because you don't know what to do with yourself when you're not working.
True that. let's see. I just look at this article in the Wall Street or the Washington Post. Donald Trump is more than right. Most Americans don't work. I don't know when did he
what
say
does that?
That
mean?
I don't know. Stories we didn't get to. We got to get to the band. This band, I'm going to download every one of their songs and play more and pay more than I should for it because they have decided that they would try to work their way around a restriction. So smart move on their part. And we don't have time for it. Can we find time for that one? Or can you give that to Rachel so she
what
can
What do you mean? We've got time. It's
all right. So this band is told you can't put on a concert. They said, oh, it's not a concert.
The Led Zeppelin.
Okay, did I say I was going to download their music? I'm sorry. Hold on. This microphone.
It's a Zeppelin played while a small crowd of family, friends, and music lovers watched from below. The show put on by the San Diego Performance Academy.
I can't find the law I'm actually breaking. I can't find a place where it says you cannot sing and dance.
Dale Kurtzinger owns the music school. It was his idea to call this a protest, not a concert, in an effort to get around the health order that bans concerts.
I understand you can't do it in an auditorium. You can't do it right now in a club or an enclosed setting. We are outdoors. People are getting rid of a lot of stress right now and enjoying themselves.
Some enjoyed themselves from the comfort of their cars. Others sat on folding chairs on what is usually a parking lot. Okay, but what about the coronavirus?
I do worry. Actually, I lost a friend from my church that just passed away of coronavirus. So, but, you know, people are also dying of the flu and other things, too. You can't just stay inside all the time.
We're having a civil protest here. We're peaceful. We're, you know, respectful and social distancing and... Well, I have mine right here in case I need it.
The protest promoter said he wasn't worried about the possibility of being shut down. He worries more about the importance of music in our lives.
Pick up your guitars, plug in your amps, and tell them you are not going quietly into the night.
Is that a Zeppelin song, Quietly Into That Night?
Yeah, he's quoting Dylan Thomas. How dare he? Throw him in jail just for that.
By the way, that was some intense Led Zeppelin cover right there.
I think that guy belongs in the wagon with
you put him in the wagon? Jay, can he go in the wagon?
Well, I thought we were already talking about...
You can't do that now. Yeah. Maybe switching up who's in the wagon.
Two rich voices.
Yeah, in order to get in the wagon, you got to get a blood test. Because the teen time lady insists on it. Right back. Muckleshoot Casino. Go to Muckleshoot Casino, and it's a bet, you know, about 100% chance that you're going to have an absolutely fabulous time at Muckleshoot Casino. And I wish the odds were just as good as Richard Belkin.
Hi.
It makes it fun, though, because you never, never know.
It's wild and wacky. It's like a water slide, but a show.
Yes, except when the end of this, your bathing suit is not up your rear end, like off and on water slide.
How obscene.
Okay.
This is G-rated. We don't talk about bathing suits.
This is, don't forget, it's supposed to be like Disney World. All right, Rachel. Apparently you went to Mount Rainier to do a little bit of investigative journalism, and you were the victim of?
Property taxes.
No. Oh. And you were a victim of?
A crime that no one will ever solve.
Not quite.
A murder.
No.
Shoplifting.
Too many people... Hiking.
Oh, that one. Yeah, that one. Okay.
Way down on the list.
Well, the beauty of being a reporter, if that's what you want to call what I do, yes, John and Tom, is that when I see something out in the wild when I'm camping, I can then make some calls and try to put a story to it because I want to know the answers for myself. So a couple weeks ago, we were trying to do a hike at Mount Rainier National Park, and a few miles before we hit the sunrise entrance, we were pulled over by park rangers. They had their lights flashing in the street, and they said, you can't go up to the park. There are cars lined up for miles. It's going to be 2 to 3 hours to get in. The parking lot is full, so you have to turn around or just come back in a few hours. Mm-hmm. And so you can't get cell service there. So we were trying to figure out what to do, how to find another hike. So when I got back, I decided to call and get to the bottom of this just so that other people didn't drive all the way out there and then weren't able to get into the park. So I spoke with Mount Rainier National Park spokesperson Kevin Backer, and he says there's probably going to be record-breaking numbers of visitors this summer because, of course, with COVID, people's vacations are canceled. Everyone's doing road trips. People are getting more outdoorsy than they usually are and just going and doing things in the area.
Outdoorsy.
So the park is packed. So he said, if you can, try to come Monday through Thursday or early in the morning.
It's getting earlier and earlier, Rachel. And just to give you an example, I was over at Sunrise myself on this past Saturday and hit the line at 8:30 and waited about half an hour. So I would recommend, if possible, that people get to the park before 8 a.m.
Did you hear him say my name?
Rachel.
Oh, that's what he said? Oh, I didn't hear that. He says if you want to keep up with what's going on in the park, go follow their Twitter account.
And our Twitter is Mount Rainier NPS. That is kept up to date with information about what the traffic is like in the park and when the parking lots get full. One of the challenges there is that you lose access to cell service as you get close to the park. So you kind of have to check that in advance.
So other things to keep in mind, the visitor centers are all closed right now. They do have rangers that are standing outside answering questions. Some hotels are open, some restaurants are open, some are not. So if you want all that information, you want to go to the Mount Rainier National Park website.
But one of the best things to do is to plan ahead, be prepared, bring food with you, bring all of your supplies with you. Have in mind what you want to do for the day, but also have a second or third option in mind in case you get to your first option and find it overwhelmed with people and that's not the experience that you're looking for.
So they know that this is a problem. They say that it's actually worse in other parks like Zion and Glacier National Park in Yellowstone. They have even more guests. So they're looking for a solution. So in the next month or so, they're going to start doing a survey that anybody listening can get involved with and kind of tell their experience, just like I told mine to him, because they're trying to figure out what to do. Should there be a quota of how many people can enter the park a day? Should you have to make a reservation in advance to come in? Should they just let people do what's happening now? First come, first serve, let people wait in line. They're not really sure what people want, and they're not sure if they need to do a better job of letting people know what's going on before they arrive.
So how do they determine that it's too full, that the parking lot's full?
Yeah, at Sunrise, there's just one parking lot. And so basically you're waiting in this line. And when one car leaves, one car goes in.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So if someone took like a bus, I was wondering if you could take like a bus. Are there like, you know, signups so you can someone can just drop a bunch of people off and then they can enjoy the outdoors and then be picked up later? That might get more people on the paths, but I don't know if that's a problem or not. Is the number of cars represent the number of people they want on the paths?
I think what you said is a great idea. That's what I was wondering. I know there is not a bus, but when I was in Glacier National Park a couple years ago, there were certain places in the park that you weren't allowed to drive, that you had to be shuttled in back and forth by the park. Mm-hmm. And I wish that they had this because then you could go in and hike and you wouldn't have to worry about the parking lot. So I think that's a great idea.
When you hike, how do you know when you're finished hiking? This is the thing that eludes me.
That's the thing, is the trail ends usually. There's a loop or you
John
get
never
to the
gets
lake
that far.
And then you turn around. Yeah, it's not like you just keep walking and then
the
die in the wilderness.
But the view has to be so spectacular. Whatever it is, it's at the end of it in order to pay it all off. To get there and be like, oh, wow, there it is.
It usually is like that, but there are a couple hikes I've been on in this region where you're like, oh.
That's it?
Yeah, there was like a cell tower at the top of one I went on a couple years ago.
Yeah, and you're like, okay, that wasn't worth it.
But in Rainier, it's views, views, views the whole way. A few years ago, I saw many bears. It's very exciting. And right now, the reason it's peak season right now is why this is going on, because the wildflowers are in bloom. There's a very small window that you can go to Mount Rainier without snow. I mean, 2 weeks ago, there was still a ton of snow on the trails where I was. Uh-huh. And then the snow is going to be back by September, definitely October. So you just have this small couple months when you can go snow free.
Tom, have you been to Grand Canyon?
Yes, but only as a kid. Yeah. Why? Were you unimpressed?
I went there with Paula. We drove all the way up there, and we get out of the car, and we parked like we got a firstie, if you could call it that. I think we walked 15 feet to the edge of the canyon. That's a great parking spot we got.
That's how you know the hike's over, when there's a canyon.
Okay, we got to the canyon, and we stood there, and I remember looking, and then what seemed like about 40 seconds, and Paula said, okay, let's get back in the car. It's hot. And I said,
You know, supposed to. I think we should stay in here longer. And she said, "Why?" And I said, "Because it's the Grand Canyon, and it's look at it, and we got a good parking spot, and we
should." That's why you guys got divorced.
Should stay there longer. Oh, I turned. Then she says, "I'll wait in the car." So she went in the car. I wasn't gonna cave. So I looked at it for another like 40 seconds.
Yeah. Well, you can go to different places in the park, right?
That's hilarious.
You know. Yeah.
You know what? You've seen it. It doesn't really do much.
You're a real outdoorsman.
No, it's magnificent.
Oh, please.
You could contemplate that for your entire lifetime.
So big, you it's feel just like looking at a picture. Huh?
It's the Earth's basement. It's just a hole in the ground.
Big thing.
They should build a mall on top of
that's
it.
That's where they get you. They get you.
Fill
they got
in.
The ice cream cones there. They're way overpriced.
Then there's the mules. Why do I want to ride on a mule?
That's where they get you. All right. So you signed up for something. You sent out a black and white photo of yourself, not even realizing that it was trying to save women's lives in Turkey. You did this purely as a vanity project for yourself. And
why are you blaming it on me? I think four million women did it.
Well,
I started it. Yeah. That's how they get you. Yeah. If you listened to the show yesterday, listeners, you would remember that we talked about the black and white photo challenge on Instagram where women, including myself, are posting black and white pictures and then wondering, what does this mean and why did I do that?
Uh-huh.
You say challenge accepted and then you go, what was the challenge? I just posted a picture of me in a hat. Mm-hmm. So a few listeners sent me information because I couldn't do it myself because I'm a bad reporter, very bad. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm here to tell you what the challenge is. So what reporters are saying is that this comes from Turkey. So there's been a lot of violence over the past several years, or maybe forever, against women, all by men in their lives. So women are getting killed by their husbands, family members, and it's reported that these men either don't get punished at all or they get a slap on the wrist or a very short sentence. So far in 2020, 146 Turkish women have been murdered by somebody in their life. And so a Turkish woman explained on Twitter, she said, Turkish people wake up every day to see a black and white photo of a woman who has been murdered in the newspaper, on TV screens, on Instagram. Our government is trying to abolish certain aspects of the Istanbul Convention, which is a human rights treaty that protects women against domestic violence. So this started in Turkey, where people were posting black and white pictures of themselves to say, look, this could be me. Let's pay attention to what's going on and these women being murdered. We have to keep pushing and fighting for this.
Uh-huh.
Somehow, someone put this on a boat, shipped it over to America. It drifted onto the sand, and we're like, oh, my God, selfies. And we didn't know about that part at all. So some people are arguing that it's distracting because now the original hashtags that translated from Turkish are say no to violence against women and enforce the Istanbul Convention.
Uh-huh.
Move those letters around and it spells women supporting women. Women empowerment. So people are, and then another reporter says that this just comes up every few years, the black and white picture. Sometimes it's for cancer awareness, whatever. I think that it, you know, unless it really is distracting from the Turkish campaign, it doesn't really matter that much, but it was confusing.
Were you happy with your photo?
Loved my photo.
Everyone looked hot.
I never looked hotter.
Very Turkish.
Actually, a couple strangers put a fire emoji. That means I look hot.
Thank you, Rachel.
You're welcome.
I was just watching nonstop clips of the most ridiculous mascot moments of NBA season 2019. He's trying. 500,000 other people watched the clips. But first, Bucky's Auto Service Center is reminding you the only place to take your car where you can trust the mechanics, they've been wearing rubber gloves long before the governor told anybody to wear any rubber gloves, is Bucky's Auto Service Centers. For 50 years, they've been there to fix your car. Thank you, Bucky's Auto Service Centers. It is the place that you want to go if you want to be the mascot of mascots. Sure, you can do minor league baseball and run around and put a plate full of whipped cream under somebody's seat. That's not what real mascots do. Once you get to the big time, and I mean the big time, Tom, that's the NBA. And that's when you put on some great big hairy costume and you just sweat your off on in that thing and they pay you the big bucks.
Yeah, so this is a fascinating article. By the way, I don't know where you stand on mascots. I could live without mascots.
I wish I was
you
a mascot.
Them.
I would have my own mascot that would be like the John Curley mascots. It would be like kind of a, like if I had
if I needed a mascot, I would have a mascot follow me around and be silent, but just big gestures. Like, I'd say to the mascot, are you hungry? And he'd rub his belly. Yeah. And he'd shake his head. Yeah.
Oh, you mean like a mime?
Yeah. Yeah, like a mime, but furry, but furrier.
A furry mime. Yeah. Maybe that's why I don't need him.
All right.
But anyway, this is an interesting deep dive into the world of mascots. And it's true. You know, all professional sports have mascots, hockey, baseball, football. But the premier show-off spot for mascots, turns out it's the NBA.
Ah.
And that makes a lot of sense. When you're on a football field or you're in a baseball field, you're in a huge stadium, whatever the mascot is doing, it really doesn't – it's hard to take center stage when you're in this huge stadium. The great thing about basketball and why I think mascots are so much more revered in the NBA arena is because it's a small arena. When he is there, he's like – he's the one thing you're looking at, or she in some cases, in some rare cases. So the fascinating thing about this is how much money they make. This I had never heard, but in the NBA, the top six or so, five or six markets in the NBA, they make over six figures. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a hefty salary for somebody who isn't a player. And they say that they well earn their keep because not only do they perform for maybe it's only 41 home games in the NBA, for instance, but they do tons of charity work.
Yeah.
So it is a year-round job. It's not like the referees where they work, you know, 16 games during the regular season in football or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's a full-time job, but it's nice to know that people with sort of natural entertainers with gymnastic talents can make, you know, pretty good money doing something that they are anonymous. which is a plus and a minus, I suppose.
Benny the Bull for the Chicago Bulls' his podcast is called Between Two Horns.
That's funny.
Have you seen it or heard it?
No, I've not. This is the first I've heard of it.
Okay, here we go. So don't forget, it's a mascot.
Yes.
He's doing a podcast.
It's time for Between Two Horns, presented by JBL, with your host, Benny the Bull.
We need to do it. Station ID.
How long is it going for? It goes on for an hour.
That is like Dadaist art. That's brilliant.
And that's it.
Does it have a wrap up?
Let me see. I'm going to
go to the very end.
No, nothing at the end.
Well, of course, John. Mascots don't speak.
That's what it is, Tom.
What were you thinking about?
I had signed up my brother-in-law to play in a charity game where everybody was a mascot.
Mascot,
so all the mascots
yeah.
are playing in a charity hockey game. And he was, I forget he was dressed as, but the saddest guy out there was dressed as Mr. Softy the ice cream cone. And he had no arms. So he didn't have a stick. And people were just checking him all over the ice. And he was sort of skating around. He's got this giant smile on his face. It's like two people are just leveling him.
He should have been the hockey puck.
Just moving around, skating around him, and someone just slammed right into the cone. All right, man. Good time for the mascot.